Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're going back in time a bit to the 1970s to a drive-in theater in Jacksonville, Florida.
Oh, yeah.
But this isn't about the movie itself. It's about a First Amendment case that went all the way to the Supreme Court, Erznoznik v. City of Jacksonville.
You got it. This case really digs into this clash between free speech and public decency, and how much power the government has to control what we see, even at the drive-in.
Now, I know what you're thinking, drive-ins, because it's really relevant today. But trust me, the issues this case raises about free speech are more important than ever, especially in our digital world.
I completely agree. At the center of it all is a city ordinance that said no nudity on drive-in movie screens if they were visible from public places.
Yeah.
So picture this, you're just driving down the road and catch a glimpse of something a bit risque playing at the local drive-in. And Jacksonville decided to put a stop to that.
And that's where our main guy, Richard Erznoznik, comes in. He was a manager of the university drive-in, and he wasn't too happy about this ordinance. He thought it was a violation of his First Amendment rights.
And he was right to challenge it. The case went all the way up to the Supreme Court, and in the end, they sided with Erznoznik and struck down the Jacksonville ordinance. It's amazing how a rule about what you can show at a drive-in caused such a big legal fight.
So let's get into why the Supreme Court had an issue with this nudity ban. Was it really just about being prudish? Or was there something more to it?
Oh, it goes much deeper than that. The court was wrestling with a really fundamental question. Can the government restrict what we see in public, even if those spaces are privately owned? Just because some people might find it offensive.
Okay, I'm starting to see where this is going. This is about the limits of government power and what free speech really means.
Yeah.
This case is starting to feel less like something from the past and more like a guide for how we handle free speech online.
Exactly. To really understand Erznoznik and its impact, we need to unpack the Supreme Court's reasoning. Justice Powell, who wrote the majority opinion, laid out five key points that are still just as relevant today.
All right, let's dive into those 5 points. What was the first one that grabbed the court's attention?
Well, first up was content-based discrimination. The court took issue with the fact that the Jacksonville ordinance was specifically targeting nudity. Basically, they said the government can't just choose what types of expression to censor based on what it is, especially when it's not something obscene. Nudity itself isn't automatically unprotected by the First Amendment.
So it sounds like the court was saying that just because some people are offended by something, that doesn't automatically give the government the right to ban it. What
Yeah.
was the second point?
The second point gets into this back and forth between privacy and free speech. The city of Jacksonville said they were trying to protect people who might be offended by seeing nudity out in public. But the court wasn't convinced.
Why not? It seems like a fair point to want to protect people from being bombarded with images they don't want to see, especially in public.
That's where the avert your eyes principle comes into play. The court basically said, look, if you're out in public, like walking down the street, and you see something you don't like, you always have the option to just look away. They drew this from a previous case, Cohen v. California, where a guy was wearing a jacket with a pretty strong anti-war message.
Okay.
They basically said you can't expect to go through life and never see something you find offensive.
So it's like they're saying, we can't make the world completely inoffensive for you. You have a part to play in this too.
Right.
What about protecting children? That seems like a pretty strong argument in favor of the ordinance, right?
They definitely tried to use that argument. Jacksonville said they were trying to protect children from seeing things that could be harmful to them. But again, the court pushed back, saying, wait a minute, protecting children is definitely important, but you can't limit everyone's free speech just because something might not be appropriate for kids. It raises some tough questions about where to draw the line between protecting children and censorship.
It's a difficult balance for sure. What were the other points the court made?
Okay, so the fourth point was about the city's claim that nudity at drive-ins could distract drivers and cause accidents. The court pointed out that lots of things could distract drivers, billboards, traffic, even just a pretty sunset. They called the ordinance under-inclusive, meaning it only targeted one specific type of distraction and ignored all the others.
So basically, if they wanted to ban one potentially distracting thing, they'd have to ban everything that could be distracting.
Right.
Okay, I get why that wouldn't work. What was that last point Justice Powell brought up?
Yeah. All right, so this last point gets at how broadly this ordinance could actually be applied. The court was worried it was way too broad and could end up stopping a whole range of protected speech, not just nudity. You know, theaters might be afraid to show any films with nudity at all because they're scared of being prosecuted, even if the nudity was for artistic or educational purposes or even in documentaries. This is what's called overbreadth, where a law is written so broadly that it could end up capturing a lot of protected speech.
So to recap, the court found this nudity ban was discriminatory, didn't do enough to protect privacy, couldn't be justified just by the need to protect children, was too focused on one type of distraction, and was just way too broad in how it could impact other forms of expression.
Exactly. And keep in mind, this was just the majority opinion. There were dissenting opinions too, and those bring up some thought-provoking arguments that we should definitely talk about. But I think we've covered a lot already.
Yeah, this case is a real brain teaser, and we're just getting started. I'm especially curious to hear about those dissenting opinions. Why did some justices think Jacksonville actually had a point?
Let's dig into that next. The dissenting opinions bring up some really interesting points about drive-in theaters and how to balance free speech with other things society cares about.
Sounds interesting. Can't wait to hear more.
Yeah, me too. Welcome back to the Deep Dive.
We were still breaking down this First Amendment showdown at the drive-in, Erznoznik v. City of Jacksonville.
And figuring out why a rule about nudity on movie screens ended up as a landmark case at the Supreme Court.
Right. We just finished talking about the majority opinion, which, as we know, ended up striking down the Jacksonville ordinance.
Exactly. But like a lot of Supreme Court cases, it wasn't a unanimous decision.
So there were dissenting opinions. That's always interesting. It's like getting a glimpse of the other side of the argument, you know?
Absolutely. And in Erznoznik, the dissenting opinions are especially fascinating because they raise some valid points that make you think critically about free speech and what the government's role should be in regulating public spaces.
Okay, I'm all ears. So who were the dissenters and what were their main issues with the majority's reasoning?
Well, the big one came from Chief Justice Berger. He wrote a pretty scathing dissent, saying the majority oversimplified things and ignored what made drive-in theaters unique.
Interesting. What was so special about drive-ins that made them different from, say, a regular indoor theater?
Berger argued that the sheer size and visibility of drive-in screens made them inherently more intrusive than other forms of expression.
I can see that. We're talking about giant screens visible from the street, maybe showing things some people wouldn't want to see even if they didn't go there on purpose.
Exactly. And he pointed out that unlike, let's say, walking past a bookstore or even a billboard where you can choose to look away, it's much harder to avoid seeing what's playing on a huge drive-in screen, especially if you're driving by.
So his point is that drive-in screens are like this unavoidable public display. You can't just not see it.
Exactly. He even compared them to billboards, arguing the city had a right to regulate those displays for things like traffic safety.
Ah, so Berger was worried about these big, hard-to-miss displays of nudity distracting drivers and causing accidents.
That was one of his arguments. He also felt the ordinance was specific enough to be constitutional because it only dealt with these very public displays of nudity, not other kinds of expression.
I see his point. It's like if you're going to have this giant screen showing things to everyone, you have a responsibility to make sure those images aren't going to cause problems.
Right. And that goes to the core of the issue the court was dealing with. Balancing free speech with keeping the public safe and decent. It's a tough line to walk.
Did anyone else agree with Berger, or was he the only dissenter?
Justice Rehnquist agreed with Berger's dissent, but then there was another interesting dissent from Justice White.
Oh, what did Justice White have to say?
His dissent focused on the majority's take on overbreath and how that would impact the protection of minors. He questioned how the court could say the ordinance was overbroad because it might stop theaters from showing films with any nudity, even for educational reasons, and also say that it wasn't doing enough to protect minors.
Okay, I think I'm following. It does seem kind of contradictory. So if the ordinance is too broad for adults because it might include too much protected speech, wouldn't it also be too broad for children?
Exactly. Basically, he was saying if the ordinance fails because it might restrict protected speech for kids, then it should fail for everyone. You can't have it both ways.
It's interesting to see how these dissenting opinions really make us think about all the details of the First Amendment and how it works in different situations. It's not a simple issue at all.
I agree, and that's what's so great about studying Supreme Court cases. There aren't always easy answers, and even the dissenting opinions can give us valuable insights and perspectives.
So we've got the majority opinion getting rid of the ordinance because of the First Amendment, and two dissenting opinions that point out the unique challenges of drive-in theaters and ask questions about overbreath and protecting minors.
Yeah, and it's important to remember that even though the dissenting opinions didn't change the outcome of the case, they still help us understand the complex legal issues involved. They make the conversation richer.
They add to the discussion, for sure. But in the end, the majority ruled in favor of Erznoznik and free speech. That's the end of the story, right?
Well, Not really. The story of Urs Noznik v. City of Jacksonville doesn't end there. It has implications that go way beyond drive-in theaters in the 1970s.
Okay, now I'm really intrigued. How can a case about nudity at a drive-in almost 50 years ago still matter today?
That's what's so interesting about this case. It established legal principles that are still relevant today as we figure out how to deal with free speech in the digital age, a world the judges in 1975 couldn't have even imagined.
Now you've got me hooked. Tell me more. How does this case about drive-in nudity connect to our online world?
Well, think about it. The main problem in Urs Noznik was the government trying to restrict certain types of content in public spaces. In the 70s, that public space was a drive-in theater. Today, that public space is often the internet.
Oh, I see where you're going with this. So are you saying that the principles from Urs Noznik apply to things like attempts to regulate what we see online?
Yes, exactly. Urs Noznik set a standard for how courts should look at content-based restrictions, whether it's nudity at a drive-in or trying to block access to certain websites or online content.
That's amazing. So this seemingly simple case about drive-ins is actually a foundation of internet law.
In a lot of ways, yes. Content neutrality, the avert your eyes idea, and looking closely at overly broad regulations, all of these things that were important in Urs Noznik are still playing a big part in legal fights about online censorship, content moderation, and access to information.
Wow, I'm starting to see how this case is much more relevant than I initially thought. It's like a bridge between the drive-in era and the digital age.
You got it. And it reminds us that the battle for free speech is always going on, and it changes as technology and society change.
Before we jump into those specific connections to the digital age, I'm curious about your initial thoughts on this case. Anything that stood out to you?
For me, it's really interesting how this case shows the tension between protecting individual freedom and keeping things orderly in society. The court was walking a fine line trying to balance free speech with concerns about public decency, kids, and even traffic safety.
Right. It's like they were trying to draw a line in the sand, but the sand kept moving.
Exactly. And it makes you realize there aren't easy answers when it comes to these complicated constitutional questions.
I agree. I think it also shows how important the courts are in protecting our basic freedoms. The justices really had to think about all those different viewpoints and come up with a solution that stayed true to the First Amendment without saying anything goes.
Absolutely. And their decision in Urs Noznik has had a huge impact on how we understand the limits of government regulation, both in the physical world and online. But I think we're ready to move on to those connections to today to see how a case from the drive-in era is affecting the legal landscape of the digital age.
I'm ready. Let's see how the principles from Urs Noznik are playing out online. Welcome back to The Deep Dive.
Where we're looking at how Urs Noznik v. City of Jacksonville, a case that started at a drive-in, is shaping how we think about free speech online.
I'm ready to see these connections. Can you give me an example of how Urs Noznik plays out in the real world online?
Sure. Let's talk about public Wi-Fi.
Okay.
Let's say a city decides to offer free Wi-Fi in its parks, but they want to keep it family-friendly, so they block websites with adult content.
Makes sense, right? Got to protect the kids.
Yeah, but here's where Urs Noznik comes in. Those filters, even though they're meant to be helpful, could be seen as a type of content-based restriction. They're targeting certain types of speech just because of what they are, not because they're causing any actual harm.
So the city's saying, you can use our Wi-Fi, but only if you see the internet the way we think is appropriate.
Exactly, and that raises some big First Amendment issues. The government can't just decide what's okay to see in a public space, even if that space is online, like a Wi-Fi network.
Okay, so I see the connection to Urs Noznik. What about parental control apps that block certain websites on kids' devices? Are those a problem too?
That's a little different. Those are tools parents choose to use in their own homes, on devices they own. It's not the government telling people what they can and can't see.
So it's all about who's doing the restricting, parents versus the government.
Right. And there's also the issue of consent. When you're using public Wi-Fi, you're not necessarily saying it's okay for them to limit what you can access.
Yeah.
But when parents use those controls, it's understood that they're choosing what their kids can see.
Got it. So public Wi-Fi filtering is a tricky area when it comes to the First Amendment. What other online situations bring up these Urs Noznik type issues?
Think about geofencing adult content. That's basically using location data to block access to certain websites or apps in specific areas, like around schools or libraries.
That also sounds like a good idea in theory, but maybe not in practice when it comes to Erzanosnik. Would that be considered a content-based restriction too?
It could be. It really depends on how it's done, but courts would probably look at it very carefully to make sure it's not too broad or unfairly applied.
So even online, we're still dealing with these basic questions of what counts as a public space, who gets to control it, and what limits can be placed on free speech. It's amazing how a case about a drive-in from the 70s is still relevant.
It shows how powerful the First Amendment is and how its ideas still guide us as we try to figure out this whole internet thing. Erzanosnik reminds us that the fight for free speech never really ends. It just moves to new places.
So what's the main takeaway for our listeners? What can we learn from all this about Erzanosnik v. City of Jacksonville?
I think the biggest takeaway is that the government can't just try to clean up public spaces, whether it's a physical space or online, by banning things they don't like or think are inappropriate. The avert your eyes principle works online too.
Like you said before, you can't go through life or browse the internet and expect never to see something you disagree with. We can choose what we look at, and the government shouldn't be the one making those choices for us.
Exactly. And if the government does try to regulate speech in public spaces, those rules have to be content neutral, specific, and serve a really important reason. That's the legacy of Erzanosnik.
A legacy that's still shaping legal debates about the internet, social media, and the future of free speech in the digital age. It's pretty wild how a case about drive-in movie screens has become so central to the world of internet law.
It goes to show that even cases that seem kind of unusual can have a big impact, and it reminds us that protecting free speech requires us to stay aware and be ready to defend it wherever it's threatened.
Well said. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. It's been a really interesting look at an important case.
My pleasure. It's always fun to revisit these big moments in legal history and see how they still affect us today.
And for our listeners, next time you hear a debate about online censorship or content regulation, think about Erzanosnik v. City of Jacksonville. The questions that came up in that case are even more important today with everything going on online. Stay curious and keep thinking about these issues. Thanks for listening to The Deep Dive.